For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
It's another edition of the Talking Mets podcast. I'm your host, Mike Silva, here on this Sunday, July the 24th, 2016. Hope everybody's doing well. Of course, you can check out the show at MetsMemorizedOnline.com. Go over there, subscribe to an iTunes, SoundCloud, or whatever podcasting service you desire. You can check me out on Twitter at Mike Silva Media. And if you want to send me a personal note, MikeSilvaMedia.com. Hope everybody's having a great Sunday. Great Sunday for Mets fans. Mike Piazza, inducted up in Cooperstown. Very good speech. Had a chance to just listen to it. Also a good Sunday because the Mets completed a 5-4 road trip, hanging in there. They got some help from the San Diego Padres, who took 2 out of 3 from the Nationals this weekend. Dodgers and Cardinals later on. Pirates win. A lot going on. The wild card race is a bit of a muck right now with a bunch of teams all jumped together in the Mets. Let's put it this way. They have a golden opportunity heading forward to put themselves not only in a position to get right back in the division. The Nats are just not putting the Mets away. But to really make some moves here in the wild card. So, and I'll go through the schedule in just a minute. You're also, in a little bit, hear from Sal Acata of SNY, WOR. Sal subs in for Pete McCarthy at various points during the week. And there's a bunch of work on SNY, also for Columbia Sports. We'll talk about Mike Piazza, get his Mike Piazza memories, also get into some of the discussions he had on his Thursday show about some of his thoughts on Michael Conforto, who, hey, listen, Sal wanted him in the lineup. That's a lot of what he talked about on Thursday. And he got Conforto in the lineup today, and Conforto made a nice play in center field, got a couple of hits. So we'll talk about that. So Sal will be on later. You'll hear some clips, not only from Piazza's speech, but I have a little montage of Mike Piazza highlights for you. You'll get to that. And I will give you some of my thoughts and memories on Mike Piazza and really that era of Mets baseball. So a lot to talk about. But let's get to the current team. So like I said, 5-4 road trip, coming home for a 9-game homestand. This is critical for the Mets because I was looking at the schedule right now. The Mets, after today's Nationals loss, after beating the Marlins, the Cardinals have yet to play as of this broadcast. So, you know, I don't know what it's going to be, but right now the Mets are in the loss column, a game behind LA, tied with Miami, tied with St. Louis, 2 up on Pittsburgh, basically a half a game behind Miami. And if you look at the schedule, now the Marlins have a pretty easy time of it as the Phillies go over out to Miami for 3. And I really, the Phillies right now, I'm not sure they're going to provide much help. The Mets come home, and the Mets are going to be playing the Cardinals. Then after that, the Marlins will be playing the Cardinals, so somebody's going to lose. And in the midst of all this, the Dodgers, I think they have the easiest schedule after they play the Cardinals tonight, which, by the way, with the ESPN 8 o'clock game, maybe the Mets get a little bump with the Cardinals getting to New York. They're out in St. Louis getting to New York late. I don't know. I mean, who knows about that. But the Dodgers play the Cardinals. Then they come home to face Tampa, Arizona over the next week, and then they go out to Colorado, and then they go to Boston. So they've got some, you know, they got some difficult games after that. It's never easy in Colorado, never easy in Boston. But the Nationals, here's where the Mets could really make some hay if they could have a good week. The Nats go to Cleveland, they're going to go to San Francisco, and they're going to go to Arizona. Even though the Diamondbacks haven't had a good year, I think they could make some. You know, the Diamondbacks are always a dangerous team out there in Arizona. So that's a tough road trip. And then the Nats come home after that to face the Giants in Washington. So it'll be a chance for the Mets, who have not played well, didn't really hit all that well all weekend, but got some key hits Friday and today. And, you know, an opportunity for them to go out and cut that deficit that's now 5 games in the loss column and maybe still have a shot at this division. Now, again, as of this broadcast, as of the when you're taking this here on Sunday night, the Nats have not made a trade. Now, Papelbon imploded again today. You hear rumors that it's the Nationals and the Indians, and the Indians may have the best package in on Aroldis Chapman. And here's the best part about it, is that Hal Steinbrenner ownership group still has not greenlit Brian Cashman to sell, which is amazing that the Yankees, even if you believe that you're in the race, you want to go that route if you're the Yankees. Why would you hold on to three end-of-the-game relievers? You don't need them. I mean, it makes for a great advantage. I mean, but you're not in a situation where the starters give you any kind of length at any point to give you leads to use them on a consistent basis. And if you have a chance with somebody who's a free agent to go out there, and if it's if it is any kind of king's ransom that's being thrown at them, make the move and try to win with what you got. I mean, the Yankees are not a team that's starving for World Series championships. I understand, and I know this is not a Yankee show, because where Chapman goes, if he goes to Cleveland, then, you know, for the Mets, that's a good thing. The Mets have to keep an eye on this because you don't want him to go to the Nationals. I don't think Miami would have an opportunity to bring him in. I don't think that that's something that they'd be looking to do. So you have to keep an eye on the Dodgers. I mean, anywhere he goes, Chapman really cleans up the ninth inning. And if you have a closer already in that situation, and right now Papelbon is a shaky closer, he's probably better suited for eighth inning work. And that would be interesting how that, if the Nationals did get Chapman, how would Papelbon take that, be moved to the eighth inning? He could be somewhat mercurial at times. But as of this broadcast of a couple of hours ago, the Yankees have still not, Yankees ownership has still not given Brian Cashman the green light to trade Chapman. And it seems like the Indians, the Cubs, the Nationals, and the Rangers, and there's a mystery team, who knows who that is, are vying for Aroldis Chapman. I'm sure it's not the Mets. But the Mets have a golden opportunity. They got to continue to put their foot on the gas. And today I think you saw, and over the road trip, because the Mets won that game in Chicago, there's a couple of guys that aren't really talked about that I think we should bring up here before we get to all the Piazza stuff. So is James Loney and Jose Reyes. Now, Reyes' numbers are not jumping off, sitting about 240, but he seems to be getting extra base hits. His speed helped them in Chicago in a game where he got that triple that helped tie the game. You saw him with a big hit today. To me, at third base, he made that big double play at the end of the game in Chicago where Familia wormed his way out of it. He seems to, and I know he made the bonehead play in that same inning, but his arm at third base is good. He seems to be able to handle most anything that comes his way. Instinctually, that play with the dribbler in Chicago, that you could forgive him a little bit. As an inexperienced third baseman, that's always tough. That ball was bouncing. Is it going to go foul? You knew it was the ninth inning. You didn't want to have to go out and allow a base runner. You got to let that one go. But other than that, I mean, can you really complain about Reyes at third base and the dimension he brings with speed and the gap power that this team really doesn't have? I mean, Reyes is where that first run happened today before they were able to break out and get a couple of runs later in the ballgame. Now, as far as James Loney, who put the icing on the cake on Friday's game, you know, got a hit today, has played a pretty good first base, been better on the scoops than he has been range-wise, but he's getting better with that. I mean, maybe he was a little bit rusty. I really think you have yourself a bit of a dilemma if and when Lucas Duda comes back. And by all accounts, Lucas Duda is not going to be back for probably another month. Probably the September call-ups is when Duda comes back. I don't think it's a shoe-in that you sit Loney. You really don't. So, and I know you're probably guys are thinking this is crazy saying it because I'm talking about sitting a guy with power, 30 home run power for a guy who hits basically singles, but defensively, with the kind of contact and how he could fit into the lineup, I'm not saying don't play Duda at all, but I'm not really sure I want to all of a sudden just throw Loney on the bench and give Duda an everyday spot. So it's going to be interesting how that plays out. Now, the third component of all this is Michael Conforto and how he's going to fit into the lineup. I'm not really comfortable with Michael Conforto in center field, I'll be perfectly honest. Only 2 years ago when this kid was coming up through the minors, you heard about how he's horrible defensively and he's a DH. And we've seen him play very well in the corners, throwing some guys at the plate, he's got a good arm. And historically, the Mets have really not had much luck with converting these guys to center fielders. Now, I'm not trying to say Conforto is going to be Keith Miller out there or Juan Samuel out there or Howard Johnson, but you're asking him to play a premium defensive position and continue to work on what was the reason he got sent down, the offense, at the same time. That usually doesn't work. Now, he made a nice play today, got a couple of hits. It looks like it's going to be really the whole Conforto in center field is a six-inning thing, because the minute they had a lead late, Collins brought in Lagares, and I think that's what's going to happen, and that's what should happen. I don't understand how, if you say Curtis Granderson doesn't have the range for center field, what makes you think Conforto has any better range? But look, I'm going to sit back and knowing that it's probably not just Collins and the coaching staff at the field level that's making this decision. This is going way up the line, all the way up to Alderson in the front office. They're the ones doing the metrics. They're the ones, trying to figure out if this works. That's where this is all going. I'm going to trust them at this point that they know something that we don't. But it doesn't exactly make me comfortable. I want to see Conforto in the lineup. Right now, and I'll get to this with Sal in a little bit. I had a chance to catch up with Sal before the game today. Yes, the best lineup would be Conforto, Granderson, and Cespedes at center. But Cespedes right now has a bad quad, and maybe center field's the reason why it's a bad quad. And he probably should have went on the disabled list. He's taking one for the team. He's still a little gimpy out there. The last thing you want is a guy pulling his quad and being out 6 weeks. They can't afford that right now. We're pretty much into August. At this time next week, it'll be the day before the deadline. We're heading into the dog days of August. It's not early anymore. So we'll see how this whole Conforto in center field thing plays. I'm not sure. Test number one, which was today, of pretty much a full game, an important game, a tight game, started off with a bang, with a big play. If that gets by him, that might be an inside the park home run in that first at bat. That might be an inside the park home run the way that this ballpark in Miami plays. So, that's where you're at. I mean, again, critical homestand. The Mets could go out there in these nine games. They're playing the Yankees in a week. They play Colorado. The St. Louis series, you got to get off to a good start. You got to take two out of three. You just got to keep taking two out of three. You take two out of three, you win series, good things will happen. This was an acceptable road trip. I was a little disappointed how they didn't look competitive in that third game in Chicago. But look, the Cubs were bound to take two out of three. The Cubs weren't going to let the Mets go in and waltz past them again. And they had a big win in that series. They did what they had to do in Philadelphia. They probably should have won all three in Philadelphia. But again, you take 5-4, you move on, and now you try to push forward. You got to push for that 10 games over 500. That's where you want to start. That's where you want to take off. And then you continue to inch closer and closer to the Washington Nationals and see where this takes you. Just keep winning series. Keep winning series. You're either going to be in the wild card, and if the Nats continue to implode and don't address the bullpen, you'll be within striking distance of the division, although I still think the Nats have put themselves in a good spot where it's going to be really tough for them to – I don't think they're going to collapse like they did a year ago, but I digress on that. So anyway, let's take a quick break, play a little montage of Mike Piazza highlights. Like I said, you'll hear some clips from his speech as the program goes on, and we'll get to Sal Licata. I had a chance to catch up with Sal Licata, WOR. SNY before the Mets play the Marlins today. You are listening to the Talking Mets podcast. I'm your host, Mike Silva. You can check out the show all the time at MetsMorizedOnline.com. Send me a tweet at Mike Silva Media. We'll be right back.
Number 31, catcher Mike Piazza.
Piazza rips it. Will it stay fair? Goodbye, home run! Mike Piazza! A three-run homer! 11-8!
When you see the type of power and the type of solid stroke that Mike has, I'm telling you, you can go through the history books. You can go through any age of history. You'll find very few people who had that tremendous ability.
High fly ball to deep left field. Way, way back. It's going. Yeah, there it goes. Mike Piazza, a three-run homer.
A high drive to center. Bernie back on the track, near the wall. A grand slam. Piazza hit the ball right over the 408-foot sign to dead center. It's a grand slam, Piazza blast.
2-1 to Piazza. Hit in the air to deep right center. Way back. And gone! To tie the game at 7.
Fly ball.
deep right field. This baby's over. Mets win. Mets win.
The odds is going to be the bat.
And it's hit deep to left center. Andrew Jones on the run. This one has a chance. Home run. Mike Piazza. And the Mets lead 3-2.
It was almost like a blur to me. It was almost like a dream, sort of surreal.
And here's the man. The Mets wind up in this spot. Down a run late in the game.
A high fly ball to right field. It's pretty deep. Back goes Langerhans on the track. At the wall. It's out of here! Mike Piazza with an opposite field three-run homer.
2-2 to Piazza. Swinging a drive toward the gap in right center field. It's deep. Looking up, Hidalgo. It's out of here! Piazza goes deep. A three-run homer for Mike Piazza.
Hampton with a count of 3-1. For the first time since 1986, the Mets are going to the World Series.
Piazza's 32nd home run of the year. His 200th career home run.
Right center field, hit well, and there's the record. Mike Piazza off the big board at Shea, and he is now officially the greatest home run hitting catcher in the history of the game.
We're back. Talking Mets. Mike Silva here, and hope you're doing well. And you just heard a montage of clips from Mike Piazza's playing career with the Mets. I'm sure some of those probably are events that you may have been at, maybe you've seen on TV, maybe bring you some chills. And you'll hear some clips, and especially his Hall of Fame speech. He brings up his Mets career, and I think it'll be really interesting. You'll hear that. Right before we get to Sal Licata in a little bit. So anyway, where I wanted to go is go back, and I don't know the age group of those listening to the podcast. I'm assuming there's a smorgasbord of Mets fans, from very young millennials all the way up to baby boomers who've been watching the team way longer than I, since the 60s, 62, some of you. But I don't know what your experience was with Mike Piazza. Maybe you came in at the back end to it. But if you don't know, the acquisition of Mike Piazza and the fact that here we are today, almost 20 years after he was acquired, almost 20 years, 18 years later, was very unlikely. I remember it like it was yesterday. And personally, I remember the 97 season. That's where you have to start, where this whole Piazza narrative and how important and how game-changing it was. Because 1997 – as the Mets went into that year, everybody had pegged them for 100 losses. Generation K was a mess. Dallas Green was fired. Bobby Valentine took over. The Mets were a huge disappointment in 96. They had done nothing between 96 and 97 to improve the team. But they brought in a guy that was struggling and was basically given away in John Olerud, which would have been important. But the 97 Mets were pegged for 100 losses. They overachieved that year. Bobby Valentine, who I thought did an outstanding job throughout his tenure, the antithesis of what sometimes we talk about with Terry Collins, did more with less throughout his managerial career. And he knew how to put players in a position to succeed, and that's why the Mets won 88 games, and they fell short to the time, not the Miami Marlins, the Florida Marlins. I thought the Mets, and they faded a little bit in August and September, could have won the wild card that year. Now, where that would have led them, I don't know. I mean, there was a lot of teams, the Braves, namely in front of them, that would have been very difficult. But Miami wound up winning, going on a run, getting to the World Series, and winning the championship. So the Mets have this plucky, overachieving situation. And then the winter of 97 and 98, you knew they needed. They needed a big bat. They needed a number one starter. And all winter, as the Marlins are doing their fire sale, you're hearing names like Kevin Brown. Gary Sheffield was a name that gets thrown around, especially considering that the Mets had seemingly for 5 years, all the way back to his days with San Diego, were always in on Gary Sheffield. There was rumors that Gary Sheffield was coming to the Mets when the Padres traded him to the Marlins back in 1993. So that was like an annual thing at that time. So 98 rolls around. The Mets have this plucky team, but from the landscape of New York sports, they were so far behind the Yankees, who had won a World Series and were the sexy team and were building this brand. The Knicks were still the Knicks. And you had the Rangers still fresh off of a cup. the Jets and the Giants. Parcells was coming in for the Jets. The Giants were, you know, still the Giants. So the Mets were kind of way behind when it came to the news cycle. So the diehards, and the attendance showed it, the diehards were interested in the Mets, but the New York fan that's on the peripheral wasn't. And then that day that Mike Piazza in May was acquired, and let me tell you how big this was for Mets fans. I remember that day very well, and I remember leading up to it. And when I remember exactly where I was. I was leaving the Flushing Home Depot. I was working in another life at the Flushing Home Depot, and I left. They got in my car, and as I was getting on the Van Wyck Expressway, I had Mike and the Mad Dog on, and a friend of mine who was working with me was driving in the lane next to me. And I remember hearing him like, wow, that's a game changer. I remember honking the horn and telling my buddy to roll the window down. The Mets got Mike Piazza. I mean, this was huge. This became like, okay, the Mets are now must-see. And it was a risk. You look back, you had Preston Wilson, Ed Yarnell were top prospects. Getz was a low-level prospect, but a top prospect. But those were the Mets. I mean, Preston Wilson was a guy who had been brought up to inject some offense into the Mets a couple of weeks earlier. Yarnell was a top pitching prospect, and Piazza was a free agent. And everybody, I remember all summer, everybody said, Piazza's not going to resign. You kept hearing the Cubs, the Rockies, I mean, even the Yankees. I mean, you heard rumors that the Yankees were going to sign Piazza. They had Posada. And you were like, okay, it was always, the Yankees were always the scary straw man, boogeyman in the closet. Every player the Yankees were in on. It was like, well, what does this guy fit? Oh, the Yankees are in on. So, and they got off to a rocky start. He had a hard summer. He didn't get big hits. The fans booed him. I remember there was even some debate. Were Yankee fans so bored about the Yankees having a big season that year that they would come to Shea Stadium and boo just to foil the Mets' opportunity to sign Piazza? That was actually something talked about. And then came September, and and I'll have to bring up the numbers here, but I mean, he had a huge September, OPS over 1,000. He had that big series in Houston, and it was when he had those home runs in Houston. Really, to me, that's when he started to become one of the guys, one of the Mets, and you knew. And what was important was it wasn't just Piazza that was a free agent. Al Leiter, who had a good year in 1998, was a free agent. So the Mets' number one pitcher and the number one offensive player were free agents, and they'd given up some talent. They give A.J. Burnett to get Leiter. So the Mets had a lot invested in bringing these guys back. And that September, where it ended poorly, they had lost the games to the Expos and the Marlins, and they got swept in Atlanta. So it ended poorly. But the ironic part about that is that you always were optimistic. And I remember always being optimistic that they were going to sign those guys, because I just felt the way the season ended, how exciting it was, how they got a taste of how good winning in New York could be, left them with enough to say, if the money's right, and it's always about the money, then this is the place to be. Piazza hit .378 in September with a .457 on base, .720 slugging. I mean, 1.177 OPS, 6 homers, 22 RBIs. He had 14 homers and 52 RBIs over the final 53, an RBI a game over the final 53 games. And by the way, as the fans were booing Piazza throughout the summer, other than May, which was when he had that transition over from the Marlins to the Mets, and you got to figure he had a .646 OPS. He was hitting over .300. So the fans are booing a guy. Now, he wasn't driving in runs. The fans were booing a guy hitting over .300, which is amazing. But anyway, the Mets stepped up, and that was always, even back then, the Wilpons were co-owners were criticized. There was always that money component. But the Mets stepped up, and they signed both Leiter and Piazza during the moratorium, which, if I'm not mistaken, was about 15 days after the World Series. They got both those guys locked up, and they set themselves up for 1999. Everybody's going to talk about Piazza and the 9/11 home run, and that's certainly a big home run. And I could understand, because of the nature of that event, how that could be what your Piazza memory is. But for me, when I think of Mike Piazza, I think of the summer of 99 and that great run and that great fun team that has always been special. And I think of 2000 and getting to the World Series and then getting into 2001, which was disappointing, and then that 9/11 situation, and they just fell a little short against the Braves. But from 1998, when he came on, to 2001, that's the heart of my Piazza memories. And sure, he broke the catcher's record in 2003, and he was part of the 2005 team that began the rise under Carlos Beltran, but that's the sweet spot. To me, that was Piazza, and that's where I'm not going to – maybe I'm overstating by saying it's the golden age of New York baseball, because all those guys in the 50s that were around, say that was the golden age. But if you're a New York baseball fan, I mean, how can it get better than those initial Subway Series? Piazza coming in, the Yankees, who were 96 world champs, won in 98, and who were affronted that the Mets actually were trying to take some part of the city back. They didn't like it. So those games were intense. You had the Mac Franco game, which I played that clip during some of the breaks and intermissions on this podcast. You had Piazza Clemens. You had the actual Subway Series, which, you know, the Mets just did not play well, and they easily could have flipped that, and it could have been four games to one the other way. So if you're a Mets fan and you look at that arc, you know, you look at the Mets in the 80s, and I was a young guy just getting into baseball, and it ticked down. After 86, it was a tick down, and it bottomed out in 1991, 92, 93. And then if it was it was inching ever so closely up, and the environment was so bad in those early 90s with Torborg and Dallas Green and Jeff Kent, and the organization did not have infrastructure to build and develop players. They just didn't. They didn't have a good culture. They didn't have good veterans. I don't think they knew what they were. They were stuck trying to, you know, win the back headlines and continue to push the magic of the 80s forward, versus just bottoming it out. They should have just bottomed it out. There was a point where they should have admitted that, and they kind of played it halfway until they realized that they couldn't when they lost over 100 games in 93. But when Piazza came back, that little inching up swung it up, and then they were relevant again. And it's a shame that there were some things that didn't go well. You've heard Bobby Valentine. I don't know if you read the article, and I think it was the Wall Street Journal, how they were in on Ichiro. Maybe Ichiro coming in 2001 would have changed it, and they didn't get into the A-Rod sweepstakes, and Hampton left, and I know that got David right here, but you lost your basically that was the guy that brought them to the World Series that prior year. So they never invested those latter parts of Piazza's contract. And let's face it, he was 29 when he came here, so the window for a catcher was starting to close. So you got a good 3-4 years out of Piazza. They nearly brought it home. It was a fun time in New York baseball. Not to take away, I mean, the 2006 Mets were a fun team, and I'll always remember that team. And last year's team was a hell of a blast from August 1st on, and that postseason run will always go down. And who knows what's going to happen this year. But I'll tell you what, it's going to take a lot, a hell of a lot, for the current group of Mets to – and they got to win a championship to do it. If they don't, I don't know if they're going to be as fun as that 98, 99, 2000, and to a certain degree 2001 Mets, and how the Subway Series was, the intensity – and that was a team of grinders and gamers, and Piazza was right there. A little bit critical at times was leadership, because he was a leader by example. He was moody. And I'll tell you something. Throughout that entire summer, if you saw how unhappy he was, it was so unlikely that if you had told anybody, a reporter, me, anyone who was following the team during that time, that almost 20 years later we're going to be talking about Mike Piazza in the Hall of Fame, the actual Hall of Fame, and a week from now his number is going to be retired at Citi Field, and the Mets would get to the World Series with him and nearly win it and play the Yankees. I think everybody would have thought you were crazy, because all you kept hearing was he's going to the Cubs. Even up to the point where they actually acquired him, it was rumored that he was going to the Cubs. So anyway, that's my Piazza memories. Let's take a break. When we return, you're going to hear from Sal Licata of WRSNY, and we'll chat a little bit about his Mike Piazza memories. We'll get into some of the discussion he had on his program on Thursday, where he talked about some of his concerns with Terry Collins, Michael Conforto needing to play the outfield, and whatever else is on his mind with the New York Mets. You are listening to the Talking Mets podcast. I'm your host, Mike Silva. We'll be right back.
My lifelong friend and agent, Danny Lozano, which I wish to thank for listening, for making me listen to him, told me that I was traded to the New York Mets. It was actually the last team that I had managed, that I imagined wanted me, but it was the most amazing experience any human being could have. I can't thank our general manager at the time, Steve Phillips, enough. Steve, you took a chance on me, and I'll be forever grateful. I would also like to thank owners Fred and Jeff Wilpon. No price could be put on the experience of playing in New York. Actually, Queens. How can I put my into words my thanks, love, and appreciation for New York Mets fans? You have given me the greatest gift and have graciously taken me into your family. Looking out today at all the incredible sea of blue and orange brings back the greatest time of my life. You guys are serious. We didn't get off on the best foot, but we both stayed with it. At first, I was pressing to make you cheer and wasn't doing the job. You didn't take it easy on me, and I am better because of it. Sometimes a jockey whips a horse. It isn't always pleasant to watch, but it gets results. The 8 years we spent together went by way too fast. The thing I miss most is making you cheer. No fans rock the house like Mets fans. You are passionate, loyal, intelligent, and love this great game. To be the only second Met to enter the Hall of Fame following Tom Seaver brings me great pride and joy.
We're back talking Mets, and I'm happy to have with us Sal Licata. You guys know Sal from SNY, WOR, also Columbia Sports. You can check him out on Twitter at Sal_Licata. Here to talk a little bit about Mike Piazza and the current state of the Mets. Sal, Mike Silva, long time no talk. How are you, my friend?
Good. What's going on, Mike? How's everything?
Not bad, and great work on WOR, and I'll get to some of your recent shows because I thought you brought some really good topics about the current team. But it is Hall of Fame induction weekend, and Mike Piazza is one of the inductees. And you're in the same age group as me. I was born in 77. You were born?
I was 79.
In 79, so I thought it was good to get your context going back to when you weren't in the media, you were still a fan. And as I was saying in the open, I don't know if fans in their 20s who are Mets fans now, who probably know Piazza from late in his career with the Mets, understand how game-changing that day that he came over was. And I want to get some of your memories. What do you remember about it? And it was a game-changing day in Mets history, for sure.
Yeah, I remember, and honestly, maybe a little weird story, but I remember I was dating this girl at the time. It was like my first serious girlfriend. I think it was, I had to be, what, 18, 19, whatever it was. And I remember breaking up with her right around May 21st, 1998, and being crushed, you know, your first relationship and all those different things. And a day or two later, the Mets announced that they're getting Piazza, and I basically did not care anymore. It was something for me personally at the time I needed to have that escape and get over the depression of breaking up with a girlfriend. And the fact that Piazza was coming to New York, just like such a huge deal, it changed everything. You get excited about going to the games more, and it makes the Mets more relevant. And, you know, even though they didn't make the postseason in 98, they made a great push and had a fun run. So for me personally, dealing with that breakup, you know, the first breakup, which is always a tough thing to go through, but getting Mike Piazza, I always said that was a great trade-off. I do it anytime. The Mets trading for Piazza, but if you lose a girlfriend, they can be replaced. Guys like Piazza don't come around too often.
That's true. And anytime you're a fan and you have a big moment, it's amazing how personal stories bleed into that. But for fans to realize, Mets losing the NLCS in 88, it was a steady decline after that of that team. And as a New York sports fan, the Mets may not have been the most irrelevant team out there, but they weren't much more talked about than the Islanders and the Nets. I mean, typically, if you were a Mets fan and you watched football and the Knicks, baseball was what got you through till Knicks basketball and through the NFL season. I know that's hard to fathom now because of how popular baseball is, but post-strike, especially if you were a Mets fan, you didn't want to hear what was going on with the Yankees. And that's the part I remember, how this breathed life into the diehard Mets fans like myself, where, you know what, now we can be at the table with the other New York sports fans with this franchise.
Yeah, I mean, well, the Yankees clearly own the town, which was infuriating. I mean, prior to 96, I never thought the Yankees would win a World Series. I mean, again, I should say. And then, of course, not only did they win in 96, but they kept winning 98, 99, 2000. So, you know the history. But once Piazza came, it just gave, as you said, the Met fan really a nice piece of meat to chew on there for a while and have their superstar guy.
What I'm surprised about today, if you had told me back in the summer of 98 that not only Piazza would be inducted into the Hall of Fame, we knew that, but that he'd go in as a Met. I don't know if you remember, there was a lot of booing that summer when he wasn't producing. It wasn't until that incredible run he had, typically that series in Houston with those home runs in September, that you started to feel he was one of yours. It didn't look like he was going to come. He didn't look happy, and I mean, everybody had him penciled in for either Colorado or Chicago. So, fast forwarding ahead, this is somewhat unlikely. Not as unlikely as him making the Hall of Fame as a 62nd round pick, but I don't know if I went to a young Salicata in the summer '98 and said, Piazza's going to stay with the Mets and be going to Hall of Fame as a New York Met. I don't know if you would necessarily believe that or signed up for that.
No, I mean, I was maybe bullish enough to, say it and want to believe it, but I think realistically, and you remember the debate back and forth, even amongst Mets fans themselves, oh, he's a Met, he's not a Dodger, or he's going to go in as a Dodger, all those different things. So, prior to Piazza coming here, I would have said Hundley was the best offensive catcher of all time, coming off 41 homers and all those different things. That's just how blinded I was by being a Mets fan. Then, of course, Piazza comes in and you see real greatness, and you understand that the guy is a special player and a Hall of Famer, but no question, I hope that he would go in as a Met. I was always nervous, though, that he would, in fact, go in as a Dodger. It's hard to make a, I think you can make a legit argument either way for the Dodgers and Mets. So it was hard to say one way or another at the time that, oh, he's definitely going as a Met or he's definitely going as a Dodger. But numbers with the Dodgers certainly worried me at times.
I have with me Salicata, SNY, WOR, talking a little bit of Mets, Piazza. Everybody talks about the 9/11 home run, and I get why they talk about that. But my memory of when I think of Mike Piazza, and it's almost like that little golden age of the Subway Series, both the regular season and the actual one in the World Series. From 97, I'll even say, because that first Subway Series was really cool. But when Piazza got here in 98 through about 2001, to me, that's what I remember about Piazza, the moments, those seasons. Typically 99, that summer, I remember very well. Not that Mike didn't have great moments after, but that to me is the sweet spot. And the Subway Series particularly has never felt the same since then. And I know the Mets had a great season last year in 2006, but those 99-2000, that two-year run, that to me still has a very special place in the hearts of Mets fans who were old enough and mature enough to understand it and watch it.
Well, because it was the beginning of it. I mean, it was the beginning, and you had the essentially unbeatable Yankees, dominating not only the town, but they were dominating baseball. So then you had the, here come the little Mets and trying to, take on the big bad Yankees. And we know the Dave Malecki game in 97, which was great. But then once they had Piazza, they actually had a chance to win some of these series. And the Matt Franco game was just tremendous, the back and forth, Piazza hitting a big homer. I mean, as he did almost every series against the Yankees in the regular season. So those Subway Series, and I'm with you, and I used to make a point to go to at least two at Shea, but probably all three at Shea, and at least one in Yankee Stadium, whatever, however they did the series. But I haven't gone in years just because it isn't the same. It's not the same for me. I think it's been watered down. But when that first was going on, it was special. And, man, having Piazza, it made it easier to go to the ballpark against dealing with the Yankee fans once Piazza was on the Met side.
Yeah, and I don't know. I mean, this is kind of a week early, and I don't know if there's any solution to it. Maybe both teams in a different time going forward, but it hasn't felt the same. I'm actually not because I'm upset about the Mets losing, or if you're a Yankees fan, they're upset about the Yankees losing. It doesn't seem either side is into this anymore, and I don't know if it'll ever feel the same. That's something I've been asking myself: what can you do to make this feel the same? Because even when they were both in 06 and 07 and 08 going at it, I don't know if they were the same those series. Maybe that's just me, but I don't know if they were the same.
They play too often, Mike. They have to limit the amount of times that they play. Maybe if they played every 5 years, or even if they did every 3 years. If they played one series every 3 years, it would make it more interesting to me, I think. Now, they play twice a year, both ballparks. Yeah, all right, it's an okay four games, but it's not as – I mean, that was dire back then, dire as a fan. that you wanted to win those two out of three. And remember, it wasn't even always that they played two series. It was that they played one series a year. So you wanted to make sure that you got the two out of three. So I think they need to limit it, and which they won't, because usually those games are sellouts, if not close to it.
And you, if you follow Sal on Twitter, @Sal_Licata, you put up an autograph of Piazza that you got, I guess, at some point during his tenure with the Mets. Any fun story about that day and that experience? And
I just remember that Piazza was always – I used to go early with my buddy to the games, and whether you wait before or wait after, you know, sometimes we would do that to get autographs, mostly before you'd go early. And Piazza would never really sign. He was always a tough guy to spot, and I don't know. He was just – you know, some guys would be easier to access than others, and rightfully so. You know, Piazza was a star. You had people waiting out there looking to make money off of these autographs and everything like that. And the one time I remember, we were hanging out late after a game. It was an afternoon game, and we ended up walking back to the parking lot back where at Old Shea, where the players used to come through, you know, back in the bullpen and walk to their cars. And the guards were saying, like, oh, you know, everybody's gone, that's it. And Piazza still had not come out, and we just happened to be there and see him walking out. And he stopped and signed for a couple of people. And, to me, that was just like, oh, my God. At the time, I'm not sure what year. It was probably 99, 2000, I would think. To having, you know, Piazza be able to stop and sign like that was just, I mean, think about it. At the time, he's just a mega star and obviously a Hall of Famer. In a few hours, he'll be officially a Hall of Famer. So that was a fun day.
Absolutely. I have with me Sal Licata, WRSNY. Taking out the 9/11 moment, is there a game that you were at that you have a Piazza memory outside of maybe that autograph situation? I personally was at a couple of games. The one off, you know, we hit the home run off of Trevor Hoffman, the one where he hit that home run off of Clemens in the Subway Series, but those stand out to me. I don't know if you have one, even if it's obscure, that you remember being at the game and saying, oh, wow, that's a pretty cool Piazza moment that I'll always take home with me.
My two favorite Piazza homers, I mean, there are so many, but I'll just give you two favorite real quick. One I was not at. It was, I think, the biggest home run that he's ever hit, and that was Game 6 NLCS 1999 opposite field off of Smoltz. If you remember, the inning before, two innings before, Brian Jordan slid in hard to home plate, swiped, right, and took Piazza's legs out from under him. He got ticked off, and you just knew that when he came up, he was going to do damage. And he hit, I think it was a 3-run homer off a small top field to tie the game. So that was, I think, the best homer. But the best one I was at was that huge comeback against the Braves in, I guess it was June or July, and it was firework night. And remember, at the time, the Mets were just getting owned by the Braves constantly. I remember talking to my friend. I'm like, let's get out of here. I can't even take it anymore. He's like, no, yeah, let's stay. It's fireworks night. It happened to be fireworks night. And came back, they tied the game, and then Piazza comes up. And you knew, again, you just knew it because he did it every moment. And he hit a monster home run, the liner down the left field line. That place just erupted like never before. So that was probably my favorite game.
And that, I'm sure you experienced that. If I was in the upper deck, that place used to shake. I don't really think Citi Field shakes quite like that. And that was John Rocker's return weekend. I remember I was at the game before that, when Rocker came in. So that was a rowdy weekend because the fans wanted blood with Rocker. That was certainly a fun weekend for sure.
Yeah, I hated that guy.
Yeah, you also made up a great point that plays in today about the sliding into home plate and Piazza and all those things. And it's funny, today you can't do any of that stuff. The Mets' best offensive player, and one of the only criticisms I could say about Piazza is that he never really embraced even a little bit of first base to help them out. But that's a whole separate story. Here he is. He gets clobbered at home. Brian Jordan would be brought up on criminal charges for that today. And look, not only did he survive Piazza, he goes out and hits a 3-run homer. How the game has changed. And think about how maybe that would help Piazza some of the rules today, preserve him a little bit, because he would get gassed at the end of the season.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question to it. I mean, and the rules probably should have been like that, protecting the catcher, trying to help those guys stay healthier. But I mean, to think what Piazza did in that day and age, now I know you could bring up amphetamines or bring up steroids and all those different things, but all things being equal, to see what he did as a catcher is just, it's even more so remarkable. It would be remarkable for any player, but as a catcher, even more so.
And on that note, I mean, I don't know if he did any hardcore anabolic steroids, but a lot of people forget, if Piazza or anybody brought stuff, I think even Randy Johnson admitted that, from GNC. Look, I had guys taking stuff that were friends of mine to look good at the beach. They weren't playing professional baseball, you know? So I don't know if necessarily that's an illegal thing. Now, maybe that stuff wasn't FDA regulated, and later on we all got smarter about it. But sometimes I think that people forget that it wasn't like you had to go to Mexico to get some of the stuff that players were taking that were over the counter and legal in the United States.
Yeah, and I look, whether he did or didn't, I don't know. I honestly don't care. I don't care that Barry Bonds did it. I don't care if Mike Piazza did it. He's still my favorite player that I've seen watch because providing all those different moments. And I don't, I don't think there's a drug out there that can make you good at it or make you as great as he was in specific moments.
That's for sure. And if there was, I think you and I would have taken it to get at least a piece of the baseball pie out there. So with me, Sal Licata, WRSNY. Sal, onto the current team. You know, you had a great show on Thursday on OR, and you brought up something that I've been talking about a little bit. I don't know how many fans really talk about it. I know it doesn't get talked about a lot on talk radio. You finally brought up the idea that, you know, maybe the Mets could do better than Terry Collins, and specifically you tied it into his utilization of Conforto. You said something along the lines, and I agree with it 100%, but I'll add to it. He hasn't really been good since the World Series. I'll say this. Terry Collins hasn't been good since he got here. It just wasn't noticed when the Mets weren't really relevant. He doesn't manage a bullpen well. I think sometimes some of the things he does do well with the clubhouse are things that really a manager just should do. And, you know, Sandy Alderson said after the All-Star break that he expects to make the playoffs. I don't know if that's a missive or not, but I certainly think that if they don't make the playoffs, that would reflect on the management team. I noticed on your Twitter feed you're starting to get really agitated about the Conforto situation. Kudos to you, because I think you're really the only one that's starting to question and put out there, can the Mets do better in the dugout?
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't think there is any question that they can do better. Now, let me preface it by saying I like Terry Collins. I like his passion. I like his fire. I like his energy. I like that he's kind of loose-lipped and doesn't not a robot up there like other managers that you see. But I do think he cost them a couple times in the World Series, and I do think he's cost them at times this year. Now, there's a lot that's gone wrong that's out of his control. Injuries, we know all that, the way the roster was constructed. But the idea that you're going to sit Conforto, you're going to back Conforto 8, you can't do it. On a team that needs offense, in my mind, he's the second-best offensive player on the team. I don't care what his numbers say since April. I don't care that they sent him down. He's the guy I trust more than anybody up there outside of Yoenis Cespedes. So the way that they're handling him is a major, major problem to me. And he's the manager, so he's going to get the brunt of it. If it comes from higher than him, then those guys should get the brunt of it. But that's got to get rectified, and it's got to get rectified now, because they don't have any time to waste.
Yeah, they're in this wild card muck. See, the thing is, I mean, Conforto had one attempt put out last night, looked fine. It was an easy fly ball. I don't know if him in center field, I mean, this is a guy who was drafted, and all we heard is that he's a DH. And all of a sudden he comes up, and he's like, well, this guy's not that bad. Certainly has a good arm. Now you're throwing him to center field. Historically, the Mets do this. It doesn't end well. You probably remembered Howard Johnson and Juan Samuel and Keith Miller out there. Now, I'm not saying he's like that. I think the real question is, do you put Granderson in center, hold your nose, because he probably has the most experience, put Conforto in right, Cespedes in left. And I know you talked about Cespedes and how you were a little disappointed that he didn't take it, take one for the team and say, hey, let me play through the pain in center field. But personally, Sal, I think he's a little gimpy out there right now. So I don't know if you want him in center field.
Well, he's the center fielder. If he can't play, he's the center fielder. If he can't play center field, I don't care if he's hurt. If he can't play center field, then they need to put him on the bench. And,
maybe they should have put him on the DL. Maybe they should. Maybe that's in hindsight, that was a problem that they didn't do. They kept him too long, just to rest him playing short. I don't know. That's just something I look out there.
Yeah. Well, that's like I said, something they gotta rectify, because they can't go. You can't have Legarreta playing against Jose Fernandez in center field. I don't care how big the ballpark is. Conforto's got to be in there. So they got to figure it out. First base, left field, right field. Somehow, some way, Conforto's got to be in there. I think he should be playing left field myself, but second option should be Granderson in center and Conforto in right.
Put the GM hat on, Sal. What would you do at the deadline? What do you feel is the biggest need? And would you try to do something really big and sacrifice whatever prospects they have left? Are you looking just to
looking to just get some bullpen arms. I think they have the pieces here that they need. I just think that they need to use them. I don't think there's a bigger bat that they could find out there that has the potential of. So, and you're certainly not going to give up more after you gave up stuff last year to get Cespedes and other pieces. So they're not doing that. I would just go out and get a couple of bullpen pieces. The other thing is that the idea you can maybe trade Duda and Darno. Now, that would maybe get into the blockbuster area, Not sure that's a trade for now as opposed to the offseason, but outside of trading Duda and Darnold and whatever prospects, there's not much you could do, and I won't have a problem when they don't do anything other than add some bullpen arms. I just think the guys here have to start performing.
Well, I agree with that. You know, you brought up on the show on OR about their schedule being weak at the end of the year. That's true. See, what concerns me about that is that this team doesn't do the little things. Keith Hernandez has been talking a lot about that the last few nights. I don't care who you're playing. You could be playing, you know, the local beer league team. If you don't execute, these are big league players. You're going to lose. I agree with you. I expect them to be in the playoffs. I don't know if the Marlins are sustainable. The Cardinals have been spotty all year. I mean, everybody's flawed in that little muck in the wild card. The Mets on paper should be the best team, but something doesn't, and Bob Clappish said this to me last week when I had him on, just something doesn't feel right. And I know you're using that last stretch as maybe the panacea, but even so, Sal, something doesn't feel right. And we'll see today, you know, the final game of the series coming up, but, you know, it seems like it's just not going to happen. I don't know if that's just pessimism coming out in me.
Yeah, sometimes it's not your year, and that's okay. I mean, you know, it happens. But I respect the fact that they built a team that should be able to contend for the World Series. They have been ravaged by injury. I just think that they could still be better. I don't think the Nationals are that good, and I don't think the Marlins are that good. I think the Mets, even now, with all the injuries, can still win the division. So I just don't think it's acceptable to have Conforto up here benching him. So I think in that area they could do a little better. And if the pitching stays healthy, Syndergaard match, I believe in him. I think DeGrom will be fine. So I still think that this team, even as currently constructed, as off as it may seem, still has a chance at the division. At the very least, they should be a wild card.
So before I let you go, what do you have coming up? We know we hear you on OR, also on SNY. Anything you want to let the listeners know about where they could find you? I know on Twitter at Sal_Licata as well.
Yeah, no, not really. Same stuff, SNY pretty regularly, and OR during Mets off days and on afternoon games too. So I've been having some fun doing that, and of course, like you said, always have some fun giving some opinion on Twitter.
All right, hey, listen, enjoy the rest of your Sunday. Appreciate a few minutes, and let's do it again, okay, my friend?
No problem, Mike. Thanks for having me on, man. I appreciate it.
And that's Sal Licata. You can check out Sal at Sal_Licata on Twitter. Good stuff. And we are almost done here. We're almost out of time, but let me take a quick break. You'll hear one more clip of Piazza's speech, a very touching part of his speech when he credits his father. And particularly, look, his father was a major driver to Piazza with the connections he used to get Ted Williams to his house and Tommy Lasorda to give him a chance. And if you read Mike's book that came out a couple of years ago, I mean, he really – Mike had a chip on his shoulder. And even Al Leiter said this on MLB Network to Steve Phillips late this week when he had him on, is that maybe that's what made him so great, that chip on his shoulder, that grudge that got him to where he is. Nobody believed in him. But there was one person that believed in him. It was Dad. His dad really pushed him. And sometimes you wonder, I mean, did the guy do this for himself or his father? But – you know, certainly you hear in Piazza's speech, you'll hear that clip coming up, how appreciative he is of his dad, and his dad who had a stroke and did not look good when I was at – actually covered for the old ESPN Champions Radio, covered Piazza's the Piazza day that they had when he was elected into the Mets Hall of Fame back in 2013. His father had just had a stroke and wasn't looking that good, and I'm glad that he seems to be doing better and he had a chance to make it. You know, there's always that mortality that everybody faces at a certain point in their life, but he had a chance to see Mike get inducted into the Hall of Fame. So you could definitely hear this touching moment as Piazza talks about his dad. So let's take a quick break. You're listening to the Talking Mets podcast. I'm your host, Mike Silva. We'll hear this little clip, and then we'll wrap up right after this.
My father, Vince, was a son of Italian immigrants. He's so proud of his Italian heritage. Una grazie infinito al paese Italia che ha fatto i regali di mio padre. My dad always dreamed of playing in the major leagues for his all-American love of baseball. He cannot follow that dream as the realities of life and having to support his family forced him to work. He built a great business and employed many people. My father's faith in me, often greater than my own, is the single most important factor of me being inducted into this Hall of Fame. Thank you, Dad. I know he watched every game, cried when I cried, was angry when I was angry, and celebrated more than I could ever celebrate. He is a man deeply devoted to his family, and after having suffered a major stroke a few years ago, is stronger willed than ever. We made it, Dad. The race is over. Now it's time to smell the roses.
We're back. Final segment here, Talking Mets podcast. I hope you enjoyed some of the work throughout the show, some of the highlights. You heard some of the clips from the Hall of Fame speech for Piazza. Of course, I want to wrap up, and before I do the final thank yous here, I want to remind everybody that you have a chance to even win a little bit of swag here on the Talking Mets podcast. How would you like to get all your favorite Mets merchandise delivered straight to your doorstep? If you check out fanessentials.net, all you do is pick your favorite team, and in this case, it'll be the Mets, and every month, you get Mets gear shipped right to your door. They find the sports gear so you don't have to. Each fan box comes packed full with some amazing gear. It makes a great gift idea for any sports fan. Prices start at $34.99. Visit fanessentials.net and use promo code TALKINGMETS at checkout for 30% off your first month. Visit fanessentials.net to get all the essentials you need. And here's even better. I'll give you a chance to get a free month. Yes, after if you listen to the show and then you get on Twitter later in the week, and I try to do it sometime between Tuesday and Friday, I give a trivia question, and then you can win a free month to try out Fan Essentials, and hopefully they send you some Piazza stuff as part of your first delivery. But let's see what I can do here. I'll throw this out there. I'll say to everybody, what is the highway I was driving on when I heard about the Mike Piazza trade? I'm pretty sure. So if you're listening, it's the Van Wyck Expressway. So I'll throw a little curveball at you guys. So if you're really listening to the program, so when I heard about the Mike Piazza trade, I shared a little moment where, those are those moments where you really know that you're a sports fan, where you say, I remember where I was when. I mean, fans will remember where they were when Kennedy was shot. Like, when there's any kind of historical thing, whether it's politics or the world or sports, you have a tendency to remember where you were to connect events with that. So be interesting if you guys listen, and will you get it? I'll ask you, where was I? What highway was I driving on when I was hearing that Mike Piazza was acquired from the Florida Marlins in that great May of 1998? So anyway, we're about out of time. So I want to thank everyone for tuning in. Of course, I want to thank Sal Licata. You can check out Sal on Twitter at Sal_Licata. Of course, you can listen to the show all the time at MetsMorizeOnline.com. Check it out on iTunes, SoundCloud, or whatever podcasting service you choose. And you can check me out on Twitter at MikeSellingMedia. Have a great rest of the weekend. I'll see you guys all next week.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.